Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome on in. Let us get into some fights. Tobin here with you. We're going to dive all over the world of mixed martial arts and boxing. Let's do it to it. Last night, UFC 258. You had Kamaru Usman taking on Gilbert Burns for the welterweight championship of the world as the two former teammates taking each other on. Big drama between them both. A little bit more spice than we thought it was. Than we thought it was going to be. All the friendliness. Honestly, it was funny seeing the two teammates going at each other. There was more spice between that. There wasn't all the Conor McGregor Dustin Poirier brouhaha that you had that week with her hugging, smiling, you know, dad's now growing up, hot sauce being exchanged. This added like some real intensity. We had both on this week. We had the chance to speak with Gilbert, and Gilbert definitely, you know, liked the fact getting a chance to speak to him, liked the fact that he got the extra time to prep for this. And, you know, the fact that he wasn't going to step in on short notice. But I told you in the lead up to this fight, like I did think that if that was going to favor anybody, I thought that was going to favor Usman. I thought that, you know, all of the camp stuff is going to have more separation. There's going to be more time to settle in. And I thought that you saw that bear out. I thought you saw more time with Trevor Whitman. I thought they executed the game plan pretty much to perfection outside of some craziness in the first round where, you know, he took a big right hand that sat him down and it was off and running right away. You know, really, it's been interesting seeing these fights with Kamaru because you've had, you know, now two fights against guys who are dangerous on the ground, you know, dangerous to engage with from a standpoint of, you know, the Colby fight. Both of them are great wrestlers. It was pretty much a stand and bang fight for five rounds until Kamaru busted up his face and broke his jaw. And then the same with this fight. You know, he wasn't going to go to the ground and get caught in anything dumb from Gilbert Burns. And so it was pretty much a stand-up fight, and it was exciting. Kamaru looked really, really good. That jab was absolutely, was so strong, and you could tell that it was bothering Gilbert, busting up his nose pretty quickly. Sat him down a couple times with it where he was switching stances and putting his strong hand in front. So it sat Gilbert down. It was really, really a great game plan on him. And then the whole fight really changed in the second round where he hit him with it was pretty much just 1-2s the whole way from Kamaru. So he hits him with just a vicious, vicious straight right down the pipe. Really hurts Gilbert Burns, and it really shifted everything from there. Gilbert didn't really have an offensive attack from there. Once the round ended there, we went to the third round, came on out, and it was just a matter of time. Sat him down with a jab, and then some ground and pound. Herb Dean was on the money with the stoppage, it seemed like. You know, he even gave Gilbert, I think, a little bit of wiggle room there. He tried to make something happen. Kamaru put a stop to that. And that's all she wrote, man. His third title defense. He's now got more wins in a row than anybody ever at welterweight. And is just building a tremendous resume. The guy is an absolute monster. And I said this after the Jorge Masvidal fight. And a lot of people down here, you know, who ride with George. And I ride with Jorge Masvidal too. You know, I love Street Jesus and what he brings to the cage. And his journey's been incredible. But, you know, I did think that, yeah, even though it was on 6 days' notice and that's that. The skills still bared out that Kamal was able to go find a way to really take out any danger that George was able to go get. And was still a great performance. The Colby one was just absolutely great. A great fight between them both. Two rivals, and he came out on top. And his championship win against Tyron Woodley was absolutely sensational. And he really is in this spot right now as welterweight champion where you don't know what's really left for him, because we'll get into his call out in just a second of Jorge Masvidal, which was a great, you know, I think is a great move by him. He knows that it did great business last time. I think that he's already built in the storyline that George has been talking. And it was funny going into the show last night, like I'm writing up notes and I'm trying to think about, you know, the picture of the welterweight division. Where does he go from here? Because we got news this week of Leon Edwards and Hamza Chimaev getting axed again. And now Dana seems like he was going to go with Colby and Leon on short notice. I'm like, well, where the hell is George? Where the hell is Masvidal? And, you know, Dana's looking at that Leon Edwards, Colby Covington fight as a number one contender. But I kind of think that, look, Kamaru Usman has done enough to call his own shot and go amongst these people he has rematches with, because he's taken out everybody in the division. I kind of think the champ should get to call his shot on this one. And so if he wants Masvidal, he should get Masvidal. I mean, it's as simple as that. You know, the funny thing was, I'll tell you one thing that was interesting about tonight, and Joe Rogan messed up on this a couple times. I'm not trying to bag on Joe Rogan, because I know a lot of people do that. Easy pickings. But he said a couple times tonight that Kamaru Usman is, if he retired, he said before the night, if he retired right now, he retires one of the best welterweight champions of all time, which that statement is true. If not the best, that statement is not true, because the best welterweight champion of all time is George St. Pierre. Now, you get another win like this and resumes start to stack up and you see he's at three title wins. George, he of course has that number of 12, but he ended it again where, like, you know, Kamaru almost scared him into it, where he's like, put some respect to my effing name. And he's like, I don't think anybody's not putting respect on your name, Kamaru. I think that you're one of the best, if not the best. And I'm like, well, no, he's not if the best. He's one of the best. We could put him definitely up there. I think we could, you know, you could start putting arguments that has he passed Tyron Woodley? Tyron Woodley had a bumpy, you know, title reign. Like, he had this sensational moment of winning the championship from Robbie Lawler, but it felt like the rest of his time he spent defending how good he was, but the championship fights were never that exciting. Well, Kamaru is dealing with a lot of kind of the opposite. And I found it interesting that, like, Tyron Woodley came out this week and he said that the UFC was pushing Usman too hard. You know, they can't just make us like him, which is a funny thing, because this is coming from a guy who was always willing to tell any microphone that I don't get enough respect or push from the UFC, you know, give me a little bit of love. And so they're trying to do that with Usman and put him right. And they're giving him a ton of media this week and, you know, all of that type of stuff, all that type of support. But Usman's actually coming through with really exciting championship performances, really is. You know, between the way he won the title from Woodley, between the way he beat his blood feud rival in Colby Covington, between the way he just beat his compadre there in Gilbert Burns, and the way that, you know, he beat Jorge Masvidal on 6 days' notice. Like, this guy is coming through with some really, really captivating stuff, and now is trying to rekindle the flame of another Jorge Masvidal fight. I think he's worth all the push in the world, man. I don't know what it's going to take for people to put Kamaru in that statement of you know, a star, if you will, because I think that I really just think he's got the whole package, man. He really, really does. He's not your run of the mill, you know, wrestler who tries to run and hide. And, you know, people will come at me with the Jorge Masvidal fight, and that's fine. But that's not every fight. Like, you can't, you know, like with Woodley, like, that was happening, like, with every fight, like with the Maya fight, with the Wonder Boy fights, that was happening in every one of his title fights. And they were boring. They were boring outside of, like, a couple of seconds. So I just think that Usman just had a better reign than him. I think that is definitely arguable. Has he passed Tyron Woodley? Because, you know, there's not too many arguments of who the guys are. The guys, either it's George and then it was Woodley. Now it's Kamaru. And I think that Usman definitely has the argument. Plus, he has a win over him. And really kind of sent Woodley into a tailspin, really, for the rest of his career. So I just think that the only question I have, my roundabout way of getting into this, is we keep hearing about George wanting to come back and fight Khabib, and that was the fight to make for the longest. Let's do GSP versus Nurmagomedov, GSP versus Nurmagomedov. But why isn't there more push to get GSP out of retirement to fight Usman? Why not? I mean, tell me why. Like, that is, you have an ultimate chance here to have the GOAT come back and fight a guy who is in his prime. He's 33 years old. You know, by the time you probably did that fight, because I imagine they'll probably do, you know, Masvidal in the summer, but, you know, he's beaten him once. Say he beats him again. Why couldn't we, by the end of the year, see GSP come out and fight Jorge Masvidal? Like, there's been all this talk about him fighting a guy who's 155 pounds and catch weights and all this stuff. This is the division he was the best at, and he's definitely not closed the chapter on fighting. There's no itch from GSP to maybe want to come back and see if he could beat Kamaru Usman. I think it'd be a fantastic fight. It was interesting to me. Like, we've done all this chasing between, oh, GSP, the only fight that'll get GSP to come back is Khabib. Well, you have a guy who, now you have the voice of your promotion, Joe Rogan, is actually laying claim that Kamaru Usman might be better at this division than GSP. He said it twice tonight. I don't agree with it. I still think GSP gets to have the status of it, but there's really no reason we can't have an answer to it. There's really not. I mean, if I were to tell you today, you know, you could have GSP versus Khabib or GSP versus Kamaru, I think him versus Kamaru is a better fight. I think it is. I think it's more interesting. I think it's got more on the line. It's a little less wacky. And I think it's also something that could really do some big things for Kamaru if he were to get the win. Really could uplift him. But, you know, George is a guy who's very protective of that legacy. So I don't know if he'll take it. But I just find it interesting that we've gone all this time trying to get him out of retirement to fight a guy who's 155 pounds when he steps onto the scales before fight night. Why not try and get him out of retirement to fight a guy who's reigning over the division that he was best at for years upon years, eras upon eras, and, you know, left, came back, won another belt, but I don't understand why the time wouldn't be right for that. You say he didn't like that whole 185 division anyway. That was my immediate thought. Now, as far as the couple things, you know, I want to get to. So him versus Gilbert, some more fallout from that. Gilbert, look, Gilbert on this night, I thought that Gilbert would have been better off, and it's not his fault. It's just COVID got him, so he was ousted from this matchup. But I thought that Gilbert would have been better off if this fight was on short notice. I thought he was riding like a rocket ship. There was a lot of awkwardness that they self-admittedly were going through. Usman maybe wasn't as settled in Colorado at that point. I just think that if he was going to get him, he was going to get him when he was riding hot like the way he was. And he almost had his moment. And as Usman said in the post-fight interview, that's how a lot of their sparring sessions went. I do think, and I saw this on the scale yesterday, I did think that, like, damn, like, it just did look like Kamaru was a lot stronger than him when he hit, even though he had some swift hands and hit him with a big shot. He started dropping him with jabs. So I think there was a big size discrepancy there. You saw that, what was it, a five-inch reach advantage? You know, that's a tough thing for anybody to get around in any kind of fight. So I think for Gilbert, I was just watching him in that first round. I thought he won the first round basically just because of the dropping him. I know that the numbers were a little bit skewed because he was trying to lure Kamaru down and get him into the see if he can lure him down to the ground. But I thought that he won the round because of, you know, you drop somebody like that. I think they got to do a lot to erase that. So they were 1-1 after it, but everybody felt like after that second round with the big shot that he took, because they were saying this on the broadcast, saying, well, with everything that Gilbert was hitting him with, it looked like it was having a little bit more impact. Not after Kamaru dropped Gilbert. It was kaput after that. There was nothing left. So for him, you know, I still think that he has, you know, another run to get back there. I think he can get back there for sure. I think that that's possible for him. You know, he's just scratching the surface. I think there's some fun matchups there. Hell, if I were him, I would talk about going to fight Leon Edwards on short notice. I don't know what kind of a turnaround he wants to do, but if, you know, some people do short ones, maybe he wants to go do a short turnaround. You know, but Gilbert, I think, is going to be back, man. You know, he's got some really, really good skills. He's really well-rounded. I thought that it was interesting in the whole lead-up, because I really do think there was a lot more hostility in the lead-up than was let on. And I don't think this was so much Kamaru versus Gilbert. I think this was probably Kamaru versus, you know, the Henry Hooft crew, the Sanford MMA, you know, the traveling Black Zillion crew that's gone from all over the place in South Florida. But let's just call it Sanford MMA right now. I think there was more hostility there, with the coaches kind of gassing Gilbert up, saying that he's the guy, saying he's capable of beating him. And, you know, that Kamaru was maybe having a wandering eye elsewhere, so that there was some loyalty fray there, you know, from Usman's standpoint. He's like, really, you know, you're telling this guy he can beat me? You know, you guys are kind of going rats off a ship on that. It's a little reminiscent of the Team Alpha Male split where TJ Dillashaw started, you know, venturing off to get a little bit more seasoning. And, you know, Ryan Faber didn't like that, and he was beefing. Then all of a sudden that trickles down to him and Cody Garbrandt beefing. And so you're kind of holding the torch for people who aren't you, but what are you supposed to say? You're supposed to not have the back of your coaches in a team. And that relationship, it's so strong down here. It really is. And you can see it after the fight, how much those guys mean to each other. It is so strong because this is not even like American Top Team, where those guys have all been kind of at one location. You're in the big gym. The gym gets bigger and bigger and bigger. No, you're talking about, you know, this gym was Black Zillions. The owner dies. They have to go to Combat Club in Lantana. That lasts for like three. Then they go to Hard Knocks 365. And then they go to, you know, Deerfield Beach. Like they're literally like, all right, coach, where are we training today? And they could have probably, I'm sure plenty of them could have gone and jumped ship to ATT. But you know, we'd all know the crosstown rivalry and whatnot. So, you know, I think a lot of that stuff runs deep. And I do think that you saw the intensity that Kamaru was harboring on that stuff. If you heard our interview with him this week, that he knew that a lot of coaches were talking ill of him leading up to this fight. Or, you know, to the point where he felt disrespect because they were talking Gilbert up so much. But I still think that the level of love those guys have is very, very real. So we'll take a quick break. We'll get into a little bit more of the news and the notes from the week, and also Kamaru's call out of Jorge Masvidal. Who can take this guy down? You know, if it's not GSP, if they can't lure GSP out of retirement, who can take out Kamaru Usman in the welterweight division? We'll dive into a little bit of that next. All right, welcome back, everybody. Towin's Fight Show here on 790 The Ticket. We continue on a little bit of recap at UFC 258. Fun card. There's a lot of good scraps, a lot of fights that were... It was a night that was full of action that really, like, you can never count anybody out. We saw some really, really fun endings. Julian Marquez, his win over Maki Pitolo, was absolutely awesome because, first of all, it was a fun fight. It was, you know, it had standing, it had transitions on the ground, it had a little bit of everything. And he rallies to win, you know. He rallies to win in the last round, chokes out Maki Pitolo, who probably had that fight in the bag. His coaches are saying, hey, bro, take it easy. Take it easy, man. And instead, you know, kind of got caught in the firefight and got caught. which is, you know, you think to that main event where Gilbert was inviting Kamaru down, he's like, nah, play. I'm not getting into that game. So you had that, and then you had this awesome win by Anthony Hernandez over Rodolfo Rivera Vieira to start off to cap off the prelims, where Vieira was like he was a heavy favorite going into this, you know, monster submission artist, world champion, odds completely stacked in his favor. Looked gassed after Anthony Hernandez cracked him, and not only looked like he could put him away a couple times with strikes, but then ends up getting the guillotine on him and submits him. So an extra feather in his cap. And they said that the odds were like, they were crazy high at that point. If you would have had that, if anybody would have had that ticket, I don't know who would have. But that was a really good showing. Alexa Grasso versus Macy Barber was a fun fight too in the co-main event. Grasso showed a lot of versatility. We got to see a little bit more of her ground game, but Macy Barber did come swinging strong in that last round to really try and rally. Macy's a fun fighter. I know she's put a lot of pressure on herself with the wants to be the youngest champion, so she's taken a couple losses in a row, so that's unfortunate for her. But you know, this is a fight, this is a game, you know, there's just so few John Joneses out there who are champ at that age. It really is such a rare feat to hit that. And you know, for her, I still think there's a lot of there's still a lot of growing they can do, but you could just tell she has got the heart of a lion and swings. But man, Grasso looks like she's hitting another level. She really, really does. So fun fight between them. You had the Bruce Buffer 25-year montage. That was pretty cool. He was crying. A little bit awkward to see Bruce Buffer crying in a giant suit. Kelvin Gastelum snapped his win streak over Ian Heinisch. He got himself a decision, unanimous decision. A lot of wrestling from Kelvin. We saw him give Heinisch a little bit of taste of his own medicine, and good for Kelvin to go snap the win. It's a guy that that's kind of was his calling card coming into this thing, but you know, has also been in a lot of firefights and knocked a lot of dudes out and knocked a lot of dudes down, and so. He went and got it the old fashioned way, grinded out the win, and got his first win in four tries. Hell, snapped a three game win streak, three fight losing streak to get that one. And yeah, it was a fun fight, fun night with a lot of action. I wouldn't say like there was any like, you know, fight of the year candidates on there, but you know, for everybody kind of dogging the card, coming into that, maybe it wasn't pay-per-view worthy. You definitely got your money's worth. And I think for those who, you know, and for all the blows that it suffered, don't forget it lost Bobby Green. Bobby Green passed out after his weigh-in. So he wasn't able to fight. Pedro Munhoz versus Jimmy Rivera was off because of COVID. Then they announced today Jillian Robertson and Miranda Maverick was off because Jillian had an illness that was non-COVID related. So they took a lot of hits too. If you want to give them the pass in that regard. But getting into it, the real star of this all tonight was still Kamaru Usman for me, even with the great comebacks that we saw. You like seeing stuff like that. You like seeing guys who there are two things that are fun in my mind in mixed martial arts. Two of my favorite things are I love seeing the rise of a champion. I love seeing guys roll through the challenges. You see them grow. You see them get to the mountaintop. Those are always cool. But I also do like seeing. I like seeing champions when they come up with new ways to win, when they get better, when they unwrap a new toy, almost they show you a new tool, a new element. That's always fun to me. I thought that was always a cool thing with John Jones. When John Jones would go beat guys, you know, you'd see maybe another element, you know, now in that second half of it, we started seeing John, he was kind of, I don't want to say going through the motions because he was still in really, really hard fights, but I don't think that we saw new wrinkles to the John Jones game. But it's always fun seeing guys like Kamaru who you can see the greatness, but you all and what got them there. But they're still fine tuning that can go there and can make them a lot better. As far as this call out, you know, I do think that him versus Masvidal will happen again. First of all, it did great money. I mean, it did, I think, one point. I don't know if it's 1.6 or 1.3, but it did over 1 million pay-per-view eyes. And there's not many people right now who can do that that are not named Conor McGregor. Two, these guys do have a genuine bad blood between them. Obviously, even in the countdown, they show the radio.com, radio.com rewind, everybody. They did show you the Radio Row Ruckus. And it should have happened this way the right way anyway. You know, Usman will call it an excuse, and that's fine. He won. Let him call it an excuse. Good. Let him call it an excuse. Let Masvidal use it as an excuse. It's a fun fight. And if you're going to look at it and you're going to say, all right, where do we go here? Do we go Leon Edwards? All right, well, Leon, nobody's seen him fighting forever. And that's not all on him. He's had some bad luck, but it is what it is. Nobody's seen him fighting forever. Colby, I don't know if that can get any hotter than it was. And Kamaru broke his jaw. You know, like he ended that about as sweetly as you could. At least with Masvidal, yeah, you can. It has a narrative written into it already. It went the distance. Kamaru didn't finish him. George only had 6 days' notice. He had to cut a lot of weight. And the other thing is, it should have happened on regular terms. It shouldn't have been, you know, it shouldn't have taken the UFC up until 6 days and Gilbert Burns getting coronavirus to give Jorge Masvidal what he wanted, which was a bigger share of the pay-per-view. It shouldn't have taken that to make that fight happen. And he ended up, by the way, being right because it did huge business. So I do think that Kamaru's earned a couple things. One, he's earned to fight whoever he wants to next within reason. And if your options here are all right, Kamaru, do you want the guy whose jaw you broke, the guy who you beat, you know, 4 years ago that nobody really knows, or do you want to beat the guy who is the biggest payday, you know, and you didn't finish him, we got some narrative, you got some beef, and listen, you beat him already. Like, if Kamaru, I feel like it's an obvious choice. I don't really even think it's close, to be honest with you, if you're Kamaru Usman. And then if you're Jorge, you know, you're Willy Wonka right now. You just got the golden ticket back because, you know, he wanted to run this back in the first place. He's bided his time. He hasn't agreed to anything. We haven't heard anything from him that wasn't, you know, damn election related. We haven't heard anything fight-wise related to him in a while. So he's bided his time. He's kind of sat idly by, and now the opportunity presents itself. He doesn't really have to take another fight. What for what? You know, does he have to? He's like, you could say, oh, well, you have to go by Colby. It's like, all right, well, the president just said he's fighting Leon versus Colby, and then they can fight the winner in the winter. You know, seems like it works out swimmingly for me. You know, as far as that matchup, does the 6 days notice make a difference? I don't know, man. Look, I love Masvidal. I love him. As a fighter, I love his story. His resurgence in this part of his career has been awesome. I just think that Kamaru Usman right now just seems like he's getting better and better. And I do think that he's just got some default tools that, yeah, if he were to get in danger, I don't think he's going to stand there and trade with Jorge. And I don't think that he has the worry that he's going to get tapped like he would against a world champion jiu-jitsu black belt artist like Gilbert Burns. You know, maybe George, I'm not saying Jorge couldn't catch him in something. Maybe he does. But I don't think that you're going to have that unwillingness from Kamaru to go to the ground. Jorge would have to hope that he gets more opportunity, you know, to get his strength up. You know, that is a big part of his training, that he can keep Kamaru off of him a little bit more to present those opportunities. Look, Kamaru's hittable. He's not easy to hurt, but he's hittable. We've seen Colby hit him. We've seen Gilbert hit him. We've seen George hit him. You can get to that chin, but you really do need to unload with him something hellacious. You know, maybe Jorge has to hit one of those flying knees like he did on Ben Askren. To really get this, he has to come up with something. It feels like against Kamaru right now, you really do have to pull a rabbit out of the hat, because over a 5-round fight, that's a tough ass to go beat that guy. It really is. Like, if you told me, hey, it's going to go decision, I would say, yeah, I would say 99 times out of 100, I'm probably betting that Kamaru Usman's coming out of that on top. But, you know, if you told me if those guys fought 100 times, you know, could George come up with some crazy finish? 1 out of 5? Maybe. 1 out of 10? Maybe. I think he could. You know, he definitely has been in a different mindset to go get those types of wins. You know, but maybe you look at a guy like maybe you look at what Kamara was and how he is still getting better and still getting better. You know, maybe he feels a little froggy and needs to stay in the pocket a little bit more, and Masvidal will have those opportunities. Or maybe he's just going to game you into that and push you up against the cage and toe stomp you and, you know, wear you out, put you on the ground, hit you in the face, and win a decision. You know, who knows? But I see no reason after the champ decides I want that fight why he shouldn't get that fight. It absolutely should be the fight that that he gets in the aftermath of that. So that's that as far as I'm trying to think, did I miss anything else? Handy dandy notes from last night. Bilal Muhammad, big win over Diego Lima. He was very much expected to win that. Ricky Simon beat Brian Kelleher. Looked great, cut him open early. Lopsided decision. Yeah, that's kind of it, ladies and gentlemen, as far as last night was concerned. So as far as the news of the week, we'll get to some of that coming on up, and what to expect from the UFC. A lot of things happening as far as news and notes is concerned from that standpoint. So we'll get to some of that and be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Tobin's Fight Show here on 790 The Ticket. So news and notes from the week. A lot of stuff happening in the UFC during a fight week. We got a lot of nuggets. We had a lot of gems to get to. As far as the lightweight division is concerned, some big news there. So Dana White seems like he is honing in on Dustin Poirier versus Conor McGregor. That seems to be the direction they are going in, that you can expect it sometime in the summer. We could assume if Conor McGregor is fighting, they want to do that international fight week. So let's expect Conor McGregor versus Dustin Poirier in, say, July. Those guys will fight each other for all the marbles in the trilogy. The big question is going to be, okay, will it be for the championship? Now, Dana White revealed again this week he is going to meet soon with Khabib Nurmagomedov, that they will once again square off. He is not stripping Khabib. He is going to keep him champ for now and see if he can convince him again. Now, Dana went this week and he's like, you can't tell me he wouldn't want that Conor fight again. Okay. That's where we're at right now. He's still holding out hope. Conor can get the win over Dustin and maybe he can make the Khabib fight happen. Here's what I would say, though. Here's what I would say. One, nobody has told you more times he's not coming back than Khabib Nurmagomedov. I don't feel like anybody's been more clear on retirement in the history of fighting. Normally, I'm flimsy on all this stuff. Feels like he's been pretty firm on it. He even came out this week and he feels like Dustin Poirier should be champion. The champion is telling you somebody else should be champion. Like, if you couldn't get a clearer image that, hey, I think I'm done for right now with the fighting thing, Dana. The champion is even telling you who should be champion. A guy he beat. And all I'm saying is, look, do what you want with Khabib Nurmagomedov. Have as many dinners at the Olive Garden with him as you please. But if you're going to have Dustin Poirier and Conor McGregor fight with the hopes, obviously, if you're Dana White, that McGregor wins. He clearly wants that to be the outcome. You have to put a belt on the line. You have to. Call it interim. Call it vacant. Call it undisputed. Call it disputed. Make it for the disputed heavyweight championship. Disputed lightweight championship of the world. Whatever it is, the fight's got to be for a belt. Okay? Because there can't be a Dustin Poirier combat sporting event under the UFC banner that is not for a UFC championship in his next bout. It can't be. I wish that he would, you know, put it to the point where he could. I wish he would be this this graceful in trying to get Dustin the Khabib fight again. You know, that doesn't seem. I haven't heard that mentioned once. Why doesn't Dustin get another crack at Khabib? Connor's the only guy who gets another crack at him. That's it. That's all we're doing. He's the only guy who gets rematches. We just saw what happened when Dustin get a rematch. He flipped it on its head. But either way, you know, this idea that Connor shouldn't fight for the belt next. Why? You're not going to like it. First of all, we've seen guys come off of losses and get to fight for championships. We've seen guys lose to guys recently and get another crack. We've seen it aplenty. In a trilogy fight where guys are 1-1 on knockouts, even if they were in different divisions at the time, there's not a good enough... Your reason to me can't be, wow, we're really screwing over Charles Oliveira here. Can't be. It can't be. And I like Charles Oliveira, and that's great. And he's on a good run right now. But why is Charles Oliveira getting treated with such grace and such, you know, such care, such consideration? And Leon Edwards has to go fight a guy not even in the top 15 to prove he's even worthy to fight for the championship. Explain it to me. Like, these rules are all stupid. They're all willing to, like, you can have good reasons and you can have passion for them and you can even make good points. But at the end of the day, you're just making them up case by case. And you can't tell me there's a reason why Yoel Romero can fight three straight times off of title. And I love Yoel Romero. You can't tell me there's a good reason why he can fight off of losses or missing weight or any of these reasons. And Conor McGregor can't, you know, it's just silly. You're just, you know, and so I, especially if the argument is, oh, well, Charles Oliveira is really getting screwed. Really? You got it because he beat Tony Ferguson off of Tony Ferguson taking the most hellacious beating of his life. Now, all of a sudden, we're all Charles Oliveira fans. And I hope Charles Oliveira gets his title shot eventually. Is it at the expense of Michael Chandler? I love Michael Chandler. I've been wanting Michael Chandler in the UFC forever. But if you're telling me that Michael Chandler has to wait a few more months for his UFC championship because Conor got another crack at it, okay, that's fine. Because, okay, what's the worst consequence that's going to happen here? Conor's the champion? Oh, that's bad for business? That's bad for anybody? Any one of these contenders, so let me get this straight. Any one of these contenders isn't going to like red panty night with a little gold on the side. That's too unbecoming for them. No. Let's be real about it. If any of those guys got offered the Conor McGregor fight, and oh, by the way, it's for a title, they'd all take it in a heartbeat. Okay. If any of them were in Dustin Poirier's position, if Poirier got, I'll put it to you like this. If Charles Oliveira got called up today and said, and it was like, you know, give me a ring. Hey, Charles, what's up, bro? It's Dana White. Hey, Poirier got the Rona. Can't make it. Guess what? You're next up for the Conor McGregor fight, and it's for the title. Nah, Dana. I can't fight Conor for the belt. He's not worthy. Oh, yeah, that'll be the day. I'll never hear any fighter say that. Get the hell out of here. So, yeah, is it ideal? Nah, in a perfect world, you'd probably want Dustin to fight Charles Oliveira or Justin Gaethje or Michael Chandler. But Dustin Poirier, much like Kamaru Usman, Dustin Poirier has been in this game for a long time. He's been in the UFC for a long time. Beat a lot of former champions. Any other division this guy was fighting in, he'd probably fight for the belt three or four times. Former interim champion. And he probably should be able to fight Conor McGregor next if that's what he wants. And quite frankly, if it's for the belt, he deserves to fight for the belt more than anybody deserves to fight for the belt. More than Charles Oliveira, more than Michael Chandler, more than Justin Gaethje, more than any of them. Tony Ferguson, Nate Diaz, whoever you want to throw up there. He deserves to fight for the belt more than any of them. If his opponent is a guy who's one time knocked him out before, I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it. If Dustin's getting his just doing it, I'm okay with it. The interesting thing is, though, you know, the interesting thing is if they're going to make it again and not make it for the championship, well, then what? Like, well, then when does Dustin get to, then who is fighting for the championship? Because then it feels like if Dustin Poirier's next fight isn't for the championship, you've gone from, and it's interesting because Nate Diaz made an interesting point about this where he was talking to Ariel Helwani and he said that the 155 division, in his words, was dead. He wants to stay at 170 pounds. He wants to fight Poirier, but he wants to fight him at 170. Now, it sounds to me like he's the guy who doesn't want to cut weight. That's just me. That's how I read it. Diaz brothers and the Diaz clan and the Diaz cult, they'll spit it in their own way. They're crazy. But for Dustin, if Dustin doesn't get the shot, the guy who knocked out Connor, the guy whose only loss at lightweight, what, over the last few years has been to Khabib, and a crazy out of this world knockout to Michael Johnson. You're telling me that, like, if he doesn't get the shot, you're telling me, you're like, oh yeah, I definitely know that Michael Chandler, who wasn't even in the UFC 3 seconds ago, or Charles Oliveira, who wasn't even at lightweight like 3 years ago. Oh yeah, those guys are definitely the best 155ers on the planet. They weren't even in the picture in the most vaunted. This is a division that was run basically by three people: Conor, Tony, Khabib. Kind of threw Dustin Poirier into the mix of it, and now all of a sudden, this best division of all time, this untouched division that doesn't have a king anymore because he retired and went off to Russia. Now all of a sudden you're telling me this is being decided by a guy who was a featherweight 3 seconds ago and a guy who was in Bellator? That's just weird, man. Nah, Dustin's next fight has to be for the belt. It just has to. So I hope they get that right. Gaethje, by the way, he did hit Charles Oliveira with a Donald Sterling, which I found really funny. And if you guys don't know what I'm referring to, is Donald Sterling, former racist owner of the Clippers, he found himself in a giant beef at one point with Magic Johnson for some reason. I believe it was because Magic Johnson, his honey bunny, liked Magic Johnson for whatever reason. He did not take kindly to this. But Justin Gaethje put up, "Sick of hearing about Charles Oliveira deserves anything other than Tony. What the F has this dude done to get a title shot?" And then he throws up his resume and his 8 straight wins. And he throws up Clay Guida, Christos Higos, Jim Miller, David Timer, Nick Lentz, Jared Gordon, Kevin Lee, who, you know, hasn't been a world beater in a while. And then Tony Ferguson. Tony Ferguson, he absolutely throttled. But in fairness, and this is kind of I do think that there is something to, if a great guy loses like that, but it's the second time he's lost, you kind of got to go to the first guy who tipped the dominoes over. So, for example, Tyron Woodley. Yeah, Gilbert Burns beat him bad. Colby beat him bad. But the first guy to really topple over the Tyron Woodley wall was Kamaru. And same thing with Gaethje. Gaethje is the first guy to really topple over Tony Ferguson and really look up. Now, there's circumstances around that too, I know, but it's what it is. He beat the holy hell out of him in that fight. Now, this isn't to say that Gaethje deserves the title shot. I in a non-Khabib world, does he have an argument? Sure. But he did just have a shot at the title, and he lost soundly. He lost worse to Khabib than I think anybody's lost to Khabib. He got absolutely diced up by Khabib Nurmagomedov. So, I'm not like crying for Justin Gaethje to get a title shot here, but I just thought it was funny. He's throwing the old, what has he done? Big Charles Oliveira. What has he done? I won't say what the other line is from Donald Sterling. You guys can go look it up. It's a peach. Trust me. But yeah, I mean, he has put himself in this position now. You know, he's had a great 3 years at lightweight. He really has. But I think Justin Gaethje makes a fair point. Justin Gaethje's gone out there and, you know, he walked into the UFC and was taking on the tops of the division. And Oliveira really hasn't been doing that up until the Tony Ferguson fight. Because Kevin Lee's a famous name, but Kevin Lee's also not been a very successful fighter since losing to Tony Ferguson for the interim championship. So there's that. Other news this week, Bellator announced that they're going to Showtime. If you guys are into that, I'm excited for Yoel Romero versus Rumble Johnson. I put out the call out. I said, you do Rumble Johnson versus Yoel Romero at the Hard Rock, put Valley of the Raider in the co-main event. You got yourself a sellout there, whatever they're allowed to do there. It'll do very well business-wise. I don't know. They might just be sticking at the Mohegan Sun for television purposes, but should they go into the fan zone that way, that's what I would like them to do. But I can't wait for that fight. That's going to be a really cool one. We've talked about Hamzat Chimaev getting the Leon Edwards fight called off. I did wonder at some point this week if that meant Masvidal was going to step in, but that obviously seems moot now. Hamzat is suffering the ill effects of COVID, so best of luck and recovery to him because he looked like he was having a rocket tied to his back for a quick minute. So yeah, that's that with that, man. And Nate Diaz this week said some stuff to Ariel Helwani. He was mumbling through an interview and he said, he wants to fight either Oliveira next or Dustin next, but he only wants to fight him at 170 pounds. So do with that what you will. That's our show for this week, everybody. If you missed any of it, download the podcast. We'll talk to you next time.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.